Welcome to the Creative Financing Podcast, where you'll learn how to structure terms and use various creative financing strategies to create profitable deals for short and long-term wealth. Whether you're a buy and hold investor, wholesaler, or flipper, learning creative financing will help you do more deals and unlock profits that you may not even know existed. On the Creative Financing Podcast, we break down actual deals we and our guests are doing and simplify the methods and terms used to execute these strategies. Now, let's dive in and create some terms.
Hello and welcome to the Creative Financing Podcast. I'm your host, Jonathan Gallegos, here with
Jeff Rappaport.
Today, we're going to continue in our series of questions from Jeff's apprentices. So go back, check out our last episode because they asked some really good questions. So we left off with Nicole last time. So we're going to start with Nicole this episode. And let's answer all of her questions and all of these guys' questions to help them better understand creative financing. Nicole, what's your next question?
My next question is for someone just learning, creative financing or wants to make their first seller financing offer, what would you guys suggest that they learn first? I know Jeff talks about contract for deed a lot or wraparound mortgages. So I'm just wondering what tool should be in the tool belt first.
So I would say that the first tool that you should offer, especially even wholesaling, if you're, if that's your goal with the property for wholesaling, is just a short-term terms financing offer. So you're just asking the seller to carry the note, carry the existing mortgage for 6 months or 8 months, however many months, if they're willing to do a year, see if they can, they'll do a year. So just extending that. Now you can do that on a contract for deed. So that's one way of doing it. You can do it on a wraparound mortgage. That's another way to do it. So it just kind of depends on the seller and what they would be interested in. If there's no existing debt on the property, then it's just a first position mortgage or trust deed, right? So I would say just the first creative financing offer you should always use is, 6 or 8 months or 12 month short-term finance offer, where you're offering to make a payment for 6 months, and maybe if they want interest, add a little interest or something like that. So you have your cash offer and then your short-term financing offer. You want to add to that, Jeff?
I would agree. I think that's the easiest one. It's what most wholesalers and or, if you were looking at wholetailing or doing the rehab yourself, it will allow you to get into the property without having to go get hard money or wholesale it without having your buyer to get any hard money. And yeah, it's pretty easy and it gives you a lot of different choices. You still will need to look at, how much down payment you're going to offer, what kind of monthly payment are you going to cover, just existing payment? Are you going to give interest only? Are you going to give principal only? It gives you a lot of choices and it's pretty easy to use. And that's a really good place to get started. All right, Christy, I know you have more questions.
Yes, I do, Jeff. This is one that I come across pretty frequently when I talk to sellers that are older and they want to be cashed out, but yet they're still open to terms if they'll make more money in the long run. What's the best way or solution to ensure the cash flow is passed down to their heirs?
Want me to chat about this one, Jonathan?
Yeah, so what's the best way that the cash flow is passed down to their heirs?
Yeah, someone, if they were to die during the term, how do they know it's going to get positioned to keep going to, whoever they want it to go to?
So if they're holding a note on the property, that note is maybe held in their trust, or maybe it's not held in a trust, but that note as a as an asset, a financial asset that is passed on to their trust or passed on to their heirs through a trust or inheritance. So are you asking like what's their security? Like how is that guaranteed?
I think she's just asking how do they know, how can they be sure that the money will get to where they want it to go?
Yeah, so there again, the seller has some kind of security on the property, whether that's a contract for deed, whether that's you know, a all-inclusive trust deed and note, that with them holding a note on the property and it being recorded on title, that's their guarantee that it gets passed on to their heirs. And now if payment, you know, after death and payment one was not being made, then the heirs can foreclose on the property.
And my answer would be, Christy, really simple. Do you already have an estate plan in place? And if you do, then just make sure that in that estate plan, the money continues to go wherever it goes now, and then gets divvied up to whoever you want it to upon your passing. And if there's not an estate plan, I would say that probably is something that you want to look into. You don't have to spend a lot of money on it, but if it's the goal is to pass on your belongings to your heirs in some way or another, an estate plan is really essential.
Yeah.
And what other questions do you have?
Those were some great points, Jeff. Thank you for sharing. Mm-hmm. So when we come across a seller and their main goal is to do a 1031 exchange, can we still make them a terms offer, or do you tend to move on to other deals?
So
I don't know on that one, Jeff. What do you say?
So yes, you can make them an offer, but it usually defeats the purpose to 1031. Some degree. You know, for instance, if I am buying a property and I'm offering, let's say, a 5% down payment, and they want to do a 1031, it's only that 5% that's being 1031. So that's not really accomplishing what they want it to do. However, let's say that I was doing a commercial property, and what if I'm giving them, you know, they're doing subordination with me, and they will let me borrow a bank loan, you know, like 75% of the value of the property or the purchase price of the property. Now that they're getting a significant amount, that might be worthwhile to still do a 1031. But normally, if the goal, there's two really like kryptonites for creative finance. And that is that a seller needs all their equity, and they need the loan out of their name because they're going to have debt to income ratio problems, so that they can qualify for a new loan right now. So they need all their equity and they need their credit free of the loan, or I want to do a 1031 exchange. Those aren't normally, we're going, owner finance or creative finance is not going to be the best solution for those types of deals. Now, I will tell you that I did do an owner finance deal that he did want a 1031, and on a $400,000, 415, I think it was, we gave him 20 grand. And I don't know if he actually did the 1031. He may have changed his mind. And I would tell you that the one other thing that I would say when someone brings up 1031 is, especially if they're older, is that sometimes they just want to kind of retire, right, from real estate. But the reason that they're 1031-ing is that they just don't want the tax consequence. And it might be worthwhile to say, look, I totally get it. You know, you're trying to defer those taxes as long as possible, but you know, you've kind of mentioned to me that, you know, you're kind of tired of doing all the daily tasks of managing properties. You know, is what's really going to change with this new property? You're still going to be involved in it. It's still going to, you know, it's still going to require your time. Does that really meet the needs that you want? Now, look, you know, creative finance might not get you that tax deferment, but it will allow you to spread out your tax burden over, you know, a period of time. And if that's really what you're worried about, maybe we set something up where it's a little longer period of time. That way the burden isn't so much. And now you are really more in the retirement mode, right? Where you're just receiving checks rather than having to be involved in the day-to-day operations or management of that particular property.
Right.
So like, that's what I would do.
Yeah, it's creative financing, using terms, is a solution for sellers who don't want to do a 1031 exchange necessarily, but you know, they don't want the tax burden. But I guess you could work it out, like you said, Jeff, if the seller's receiving a large down payment, say $100,000, $200,000, right? Maybe the property's worth a lot more, but I guess they could 1031 like that, so they wouldn't, you know, have to pay 20% on that $100,000 to the tax man.
Yeah, I'd like it probably more when the loan is, you know, a big portion of the purchase price. You know, if it's 70, 75, maybe even 80%, that's a good portion, right? And now it's probably manageable to pay taxes on 20 or 25% and 1031, 70, 75, 80%. But, you know, don't assume, ask. And more than likely, most of them will say that, you know, the 1031 is what they're doing, and that will more than likely eliminate doing the creative finance strategies. And, you know, it's no different, really, than finding people that are willing to take a low cash price, right? The majority of people that you talk to are not willing to do that. They want top price or closer to it, and you are looking for the minority. In creative finance, it's very similar. Now the only difference is you can work with more people, and but there are still a couple of instances where, hey, it's going to be tougher to create the financing and deal with a couple of the situations that could come up. Thank you for that, right. Anthony.
Yeah, that was a great question.
Yeah.
Hey, great. Thanks. Thanks for all these answers. These are great. Just on the back of my question that you answered in the earlier podcast about how do we keep our sellers safe, I was wondered, how are we able to protect ourselves and our sellers, given the fact that you know, there may be falling prices in the future, or if there ever were to be falling prices, because we are basically using an assumption within all of our offers that the price will stay you know, constant. So I'd be very interested to hear how we keep ourselves, protect ourselves from falling prices.
What do you think, Jonathan?
Yeah, you can't. I mean, no one has a crystal ball and can predict the next market crash of, you know, real estate, right? Or they can't time it. So you just buy on fundamentals. You buy on cash flow. You make an offer. If you're holding it long term, you make an offer where the cash flow will work for you. Or if you're wholesaling it, then unless you're caught right in the middle, right when the market drops, you're usually very secure when you're wholesaling it, because you won't have any money out of your own pocket, right? Especially if you're requiring, you know, an earnest money or down payment from your buyer. So it depends on what your purpose is. right? So if you're buying to flip it, then, you know, you got to buy it at the right price where it makes sense. And you want to give yourself a little buffer room in case the market drops a little bit. So you got to build in protection there with your offer price. If you're planning to hold it long-term as a rental, well, you just need to know what market rents are in the area. And then maybe account for, you know, a 5% drop or a 10% drop. Usually when there's a crash in the market, like our last crash, people lose their homes. They still need a place to live. They're going to rent somewhere, right? This is becoming a renter's nation. And so rents will typically rise in that case, but you know, they could still fall in some areas. So you know, the old adage is you make money when you buy, right? So that's how you protect yourself. What would you say, Jeff?
Yeah, I think that if you look at all the things that you should normally look at, which is location, what's the median home price, and you stay around that, maybe just above it. If there was a crash, which I don't know that we're going to see a crash, there certainly will be a correction, but unless you're dealing in the higher price range, the higher rents, the higher asset classes, there's probably very little risk. And keep in mind that the goal that you should be doing when you are creating these kinds of financing with sellers is that there should be no recourse. So seller has the right to come after their property in case of default, but they don't have the right to come after you for anything else. And the one thing that I love about creative finance is that what if all hell broke loose and that, you know, your buyer left, no one wants this property, it's way overpriced. What if you go back to the seller and say, I am so sorry, but you know, I can't continue to make payments on this, and I'm not finding anyone that wants to, and I want to give back the property so that you can make the decision on what's the best way to deal with this going forward. Is that ideal? Not really, but worst case scenario, that's a lot better than having a whole bunch of bank loans, because I'll tell you, the bank doesn't care. So, but now you're really not the person getting hurt. Now, I don't advocate, you know, hurting others. I think that you have a specific responsibility for doing everything that you can to make this right. But at the same time, push comes to shove, here you go, Mr. Seller. I don't want you to have to foreclose. I don't want you to fall behind on payments, but I can't deal with this property any longer. So
yeah, and getting in light is protection for you, right? So yep. If you bought a property and you only had to put $10,000 down and it didn't work out and you had to hand that property back, you're only out $10,000, right?
Yeah, $10,000 minus any money that you may have already received.
Yeah, or put into the property. Yeah. Yep. So yeah, getting in light, and I mean, you can always, like you said, Jeff, that was a great point. You can always hand the property back.
Yep. Anthony?
Thanks, guys. And do you ever pre-negotiate an extension just in case when you get to that point and the equity isn't there, we might be able to extend it a bit further just so that they know what they're getting into, and we know that if this scenario happens, there might be an extension? Is that the kind of thing you pre-negotiate?
Sometimes.
Yeah. I think if you're holding the property long-term, well, even, you know, 4 or 5 years, I think it's always worth asking if, you know, you can extend an additional 2 years.
Even that property that we sold to you, Jonathan, a few years ago, we should have had a built-in extension.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. That would have been great to have a built-in extension on that, because I had to go out and find a hard money lender and do another closing. And so it became more expensive for me.
Right.
Yeah, so it would be nice to have that. And if you're even offering a short-term offer, like, you know, 6 months with the possibility of extending it to, you know, 12 months with maybe additional money, if the seller's not open to it, then say, well, what if we give you additional money?
Yeah.
What if we can give you some more principal pay down, you know, another $5,000 or something? Would you consider it then?
Yeah, and I think that's where it's really important is when you are trying to be aggressive, right? You're trying to offer a shorter term. And the ones that come to my mind are when you're doing a rehab, so that short-term financing where, hey, we're offering maybe 6 months. If it's a bigger rehab or you have contractors that give you a problem, 6 months may not be enough time. So you might want to have, hey, I'm allowed one or two extensions for 30 or 45 days each. And for each one, I will pay $5,000 principal payment. That way, you know that, you know, hey, we're making this happen and you're still getting paid to stay in it a little longer. Another one would be if you were doing some income property, you know, apartments or storage or mobile home parks. And the goal is that you want your financing in place long enough so that you can fix whatever problems and then refinance based on a new value. And yeah, a lot of times people underestimate how long that will take. You know, people forget that there may be some leases involved and you can't do anything. Now you have to abide by those leases. And if, you know, they're 8-10 months away or longer, that, you know, you may need more like 18 to 24 months and maybe you put 12 months and maybe you need to be aggressive to get the seller to accept it. So you're aggressive, like, hey, I'll get this done in 6 months or 12 months, but I don't ever want to promise something that I can't deliver. So I need the option to extend it. And, you know, here's what I'll do to extend for 2 months, 3 months, 6 months, whatever the case may be. So yes, we do it. We probably don't do it enough.
Right. And so yeah, good practice is to, you know, always pre-negotiate an extension on terms.
Yep.
Brilliant answers. Thanks so much.
Yep. Let's go back to Nicole maybe for one more question and then we'll wrap this one up.
All right. This kind of goes off of what Anthony asked just now. You know, in the real estate world, we always talk about creating terms. And maybe like the less popular thing to talk about is, you know, when those terms come to an end. So whether it's like the short term, like 6 months, 3 years, 5 years, are you guys typically refinancing out or are you trying to create new terms at the end of those, you know, let's say it's like 3 years or whatever. I'm just curious, like what happens at the end?
So what happens at the end is, well, it depends on what you're buying it for, right? So if you're just wholesaling the property and you've negotiated terms, well, it doesn't really matter to you or it doesn't have any impact on you what happens at the end. If you're passing, say you're wholesaling it to a landlord and they know that there's a balloon at the end of that term, then and they need to be aware of that up front, of course, right? Because you're going to disclose the terms. Well, their goal is going to be refinance the property, or maybe they want to sell it at the end of that term. So they can, you know, they'll position themselves to refinance. And we always talk about if you're creating a term, if you're creating terms, by the end of that term, you want to be somewhere around the 80% loan to value range as far as principal pay down, so that you are in a better position to refinance without having to pull any additional money out of your pocket for closing. Because if you're buying a single family home as an investor, the banks are going to want you to put 20% down. Well, if you already own that home and you refinance, well, you can use that equity as that margin, right? So if you know, property is worth 100,000 and you only owe 80,000 on it, well, you can refinance 80% loan to value without bringing additional funds. So you always got to think about the balloon payment. If you're wholesaling it, it's not your problem, right? It's going to be your buyer's problem. If you're looking to do, you know, hold it as a rental, then you got to think about, okay, how am I going to, you know, position myself for, you know, an 80% loan to value in the future? That's how you should think of it. If you're creating terms and holding the property as a rental. You want to add anything to that, Jeff?
I think you always go into every offer. So not even every deal, but every offer that you make, you have a particular exit strategy. And you may have a plan A and you may have a plan B. And the goal really is to know where you want to go with this property. But the flexibility of owner finance is that you are dealing with an individual, not like a bank and strict guidelines. So there's always a possibility that you can go and renegotiate terms if you need to. And you can incentivize a seller by offering them more money, cash down, more interest, whatever. So you have some flexibility, but and things always change, right? You may go into something with one exit strategy and it's 4 years later and things have changed. And so the flexibility is what's important, but I always think that you should have a plan. And that plan may be need to be modified over some time, but you're always looking at what are my options. And it's like buying a rental property and thinking to yourself, my goal is I'm gonna own this forever. And then things change. You know, you need the money and 5 years later, prices have gone way up and it may make more sense to sell this property and buy something else. So have your exit, have a plan, look at it as over some time, modify it, and keep that flexibility with the seller. Keep a good relationship. Okay, thanks. Should we wrap this one up?
Yep, we'll wrap this one up. Hey guys, well, thanks for those questions. Again, all great questions, and I'm sure our audience has similar questions. So hopefully this is very helpful to you guys out there as well, to kind of solidify your knowledge of creative financing and why we use it and the benefits and the drawbacks. So guys, you can find all of our episodes at thecreativefinancingpodcast.com. That's our archive. So if you miss something, you can go back there. If you guys have not already, please, please, please join the Facebook group, the Creative Financing Podcast there, to continue to build that community. And then, by the way, please like our show. So wherever you get your podcasts, hit the thumbs up or whatever it is. It really helps us out. If you're enjoying this content and it's helpful to you, please do that. And write us a review. Let us know how we're doing. If you guys are interested in Jeff's apprenticeship program, please email Rebecca. That's R-E-B-E-C-C-A at weofferoptions.com. And lastly, if you're interested in the Creative Financing Academy, where you can, you know, watch videos of Jeff going through his CRM and coming up with offers, just like we talk about on this show, if you want to see him do that, and really follow along step by step with him and with your financial calculator, email Jeff for more information on that. And that's J-E-F-F at weofferoptions.com. And he has a little video he can send you. So if you like the video, definitely join the Academy, because if you're serious about learning creative financing, this will be the best way to do that. Any last words, Jeff?
Yeah, get at the very least, get the free video and join our Facebook group. We have a lot of smart people in that group. I will do my best to answer your questions. You can post deals in there, potential deals. We want to help you. So join the Facebook group and certainly order the free video. I think you'll like the free video.
Right. Okay, guys. Till next time, go out there and create some terms.
Thanks for listening to the Creative Financing Podcast. We need your feedback to continue to bring you the best strategies in creative financing. So please subscribe, rate, and review the show on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. We greatly appreciate your ear, and please pass this on. Until next time, create some terms. This show offers general information on creative financing strategies and real estate investments. Nothing contained herein should be considered personal, legal, or financial advice. Every state has individual laws governing the use and type of documents used to execute strategies discussed herein. You should consult with a local licensed real estate broker and attorney before relying on any information contained herein. Information is not guaranteed, and opinions of the guests are their own. Profits are not guaranteed, and there's always inherent risk in real estate investing.